You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Facebook's secret mission to unmask Snapchat. The White House wants AI audits. Hackers exploit the open-source Ray AI framework. Finnish police ID those responsible for the 2021 Parliament breach. Operation Flight Night targets Indian government and energy sectors. Chinese APT groups target ASEAN entities. A notorious robocaller is rung up for nearly $10 million. In our latest Learning Layer, join Sam Meisenberg as he unpacks the intricacies of the CISSP diagnostic with Joe Kerrigan from Johns Hopkins University. And Ann Johnson from Microsoft's Afternoon Cyber Tea visits the world of smashing security with Graham Cluley and Carol Terrio. And the UK's watchers need watching. It's Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. A report from TechCrunch says that in 2016, Facebook initiated Project Ghostbusters, a clandestine operation aimed at decrypting and intercepting network traffic between Snapchat users and its servers to analyze user behavior and compete more effectively. This project was revealed through court documents from a class action lawsuit against Meta, Facebook's parent company. The project extended to analyzing traffic from Amazon and YouTube users, requiring the development of technology to bypass encryption. Facebook's method involved Onavo, a VPN-like service it acquired, which could intercept encrypted app traffic. In internal communications, Mark Zuckerberg emphasized the importance of finding new ways to gain analytics on competitors due to Snapchat's encrypted traffic and rapid growth. Despite internal concerns over the ethical implications of intercepting encrypted data, the project proceeded, using an adversary-in-the-middle approach to gather data. This revelation came from a lawsuit alleging that Facebook lied about its data collection practices and used the data to unfairly compete with emerging companies. The project raised significant privacy concerns, with key Facebook engineers questioning the morality of such practices. The Biden administration is advocating for mandatory audits of high-risk AI systems and clearer guidelines on liability in the AI supply chain. This comes per a report from the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. This push for accountability aims to ensure responsible AI use and management of associated risks, aligning with President Biden's executive order to secure AI through developer notifications of high-risk AI model training. The report suggests independent audits, potential pre-release certifications for high-risk sectors, and AI nutrition labels for better transparency. It also encourages legal discussions on applying existing liability rules to AI, proposing a collaborative approach to managing AI's cross-sectoral risks, including a national registry for high-risk AI deployments and an AI incident reporting database. Hackers are exploiting a vulnerability in Ray, an open-source AI framework used for developing and deploying large-scale Python applications, including machine learning, scientific computing, and data processing. The vulnerability, termed Shadow Ray by Oligo security researchers, has led to the compromise of thousands of Ray servers globally, affecting sectors like healthcare, education, and video analytics. This framework, utilized by leading tech firms such as Uber, Amazon, and OpenAI, has become a target due to its extensive use in processing vast amounts of data and executing complex computational tasks. The exploit allows attackers to hijack computing resources for cryptocurrency mining and access sensitive information, including database credentials and payment tokens. Despite its wide impact, the vulnerability was not initially regarded as critical, partly because Anyscale, the developer behind Ray, contends that the framework is designed for secure network environments, arguing the issue is a feature, not a flaw. Finnish police have confirmed that APT31, a hacking group associated with China's Ministry of State Security, was responsible for a 2021 breach of Finland's parliament. A joint investigation involving the Finnish Security and Intelligence Service and international partners has been examining the breach, focusing on charges of aggravated espionage and other offenses. The investigation, spanning from autumn 2020 to early 2021, has uncovered a complex criminal infrastructure and identified one suspect. The breach, initially described as state cyber espionage, involved unauthorized access to several parliament email accounts, including those of Finnish MPs. Analysts at Eclectic IQ have uncovered a cyber espionage campaign called Operation Flight Night, targeting Indian government and energy sector entities starting March 7, 2024. The attackers used a phishing email disguised as an Indian Air Force invitation to distribute a modified version of the Hack Browser Data Information Stealer. The malware exfiltrated confidential data, including internal documents and web browser information, via Slack channels. Over 881 gigabytes of data from agencies overseeing electronic communications, IT, national defense, and private energy companies were compromised, suggesting a motive of further infiltrating Indian government infrastructure. Similarities with a previous attack in January 2024 indicate a likely cyber espionage intent. Eclectic IQ has alerted Indian authorities to aid in victim identification and response efforts. Over the last 3 months, two Chinese APT groups have been targeting entities within countries affiliated with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, through cyber espionage campaigns, as observed by Unit 42 of Palo Alto Networks. Their report highlights the activities of Stately Taurus, an APT group active since at least 2012, known for its espionage against governments, nonprofits, and NGOs globally. This recent campaign targeted Myanmar, the Philippines, Japan, and Singapore, coinciding with the ASEAN-Australia Special Summit from March 4th through the 6th of this year. Unit 42 identified two malware packages, Talking Points for China.zip and PSO.scr, the latter possibly referring to a Myanmar military rank, which were used to infiltrate Asian countries during the summit. The second Chinese-affiliated APT group remained unnamed in the Unit 42 report. A Montana federal court imposed a $9.9 million penalty and issued an injunction against an individual for making thousands of illegal and harmful spoofed robocalls nationwide, violating the Truth in Caller ID Act and Telephone Consumer Protection Act. Initiated by a Federal Communications Commission investigation into robocalls that misled recipients with false local caller IDs, these messages contained offensive content aimed at certain communities. Notably, calls targeted areas in Brooklyn, Iowa, and Charlottesville, Virginia during sensitive times. The FCC traced the calls to Scott Rhodes, leading to a January 2021 penalty of $9.9 million. Following a Justice Department lawsuit, the court affirmed the penalty and injunction. Coming up after the break, in our latest Learning Layer, Sam Meisenberg is joined by Joe Kerrigan to unpack the intricacies of the CISSP diagnostic, and Ann Johnson from Microsoft's Afternoon Cyber Tea visits with Graham Cluley and Carol Terrio from Smashing Security. Stay with us. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. In our latest Learning Layer, host Sam Meisenberg unpacks the intricacies of the CISSP diagnostic with Joe Kerrigan from Johns Hopkins University.
All right, welcome back to another Learning Layer segment. We are going to continue our conversation with Joe Kerrigan as he prepares for his CISSP exam. So, Joe,
yep.
You had homework since the last time we talked.
I did.
Okay. Did you do it and how'd it go?
I took the diagnostic. I did not get a 96% on this one.
Okay.
I got a 68%.
Oh.
Which is somewhere between okay and ecstatic at 75%. So I'm a little closer to ecstatic.
Good.
So I'm pleased with how I did.
Good.
But I'm not ecstatic. I'm okay with it.
And Joe, before we talk about your specific results, I do want to kind of give one word for the average studier because, you know, we already established Joe has a lot of years of experience.
Right.
You're a teacher. You know this stuff well. So I was expecting a good score. But I want to give a shout out for maybe the people who, you know, scores are not going to be so high or not getting a 68% or getting a 25% or don't have 14 years of experience. That's okay. A diagnostic is just a diagnostic. Think of it as like learning about yourself, right?
Right.
It's just data. And all it's there is to make you realize how much work you have. It's not supposed to make you feel bad, so don't feel discouraged. It's just a number, and you're just learning about yourself. Where you start is not where you end. So, Joe, back to you and your 68%.
Right.
Per domain. How did you do?
Nice breakdown. Well, initially, I said the domain I was going to have the most trouble with would be security and risk management, mm-hmm. but I did pretty well. I got a 73.91% in that one.
Nice.
And much to my dismay, software development security, I came in at around 66. Now, there's only three questions about that, but I missed two of them.
Now, sometimes real-world practical experience can get in the way of getting the right answer on the test. And that's because IAC squared and CISSP with some of this content have their own sort of reality. So that's why somebody like me, who has no years of experience as a practitioner can have CSSP, CISM, CEH. Like, think about it. I've never done any ethical hacking. How am I a certified ethical hacker? I got a 93% on that exam, right? That doesn't make sense. So look, I mean, the major flaw is that they're multiple choice exams, right?
Yeah.
Written with a perspective from the test maker,
yes,
which might be a different perspective than a practitioner.
And if we follow this back to our first segment we did on this, where I talked about how I was told that Hopkins does not value certifications, mm-hmm. That's why.
Yeah.
One of the reasons they don't value certification, sure, and they value research over it is because research is actually a better demonstration of your skill set.
Yep.
Right? It's peer-reviewed. This is, you know, like you said, this is a multiple-choice test. Now, it does demonstrate some basic qualifications. And not to diminish the value of a security or any certification to a practitioner of any field, mm-hmm. there are a lot of places where you have to have these in order to get hired.
Mm-hmm. I also think what would be helpful, Joe, if you don't mind, is maybe we could actually pick a question from the diagnostic that you got wrong.
Sure.
And just sort of, you know, walk through the content and maybe think about what you were thinking and how we could, you know, make sure next time you get it right.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've pulled up question number 16 on your test. And this is one that you got wrong, but we're going to try to figure out what happened. We're going to diagnose the diagnostic and see what happened.
Okay.
So this question is a very short one in the sense that, to use some technical test-taking language, the question stimulus is the question stem. So what I'm trying to say is sometimes you get a long question that has a lot of detail. This one's very short and straightforward, so it's good for podcasting.
Right.
But it says, which of the following would be the most expensive DRP testing method? Okay, stop. We're already going to get into some test A strategy. We're on the diagnostic. I still want to talk strategy.
Okay.
When you get a question like this, before just reading the answer choices, we want to think about the question stem, what they're asking, and try to see if we can do some pre-work before we get to the answer choices. So, Joe, my question back to you is twofold. Number one, if you had to reword the question in your own words, what are they asking? And number two, they have an acronym in there, which is unfortunate.
Right.
What does DRP mean?
Disaster Recovery Plan.
Okay. And right. So what are they asking?
They're asking what would be the most expensive way of testing a disaster recovery plan.
Got it.
So there are a number of different ways you can test a disaster recovery plan, tabletop exercises, things mm-hmm. of that nature. Mm-hmm. But which is actually one of the answers here is should we start reading the answers now?
Sure.
So one of the answer A is actually structured walkthrough, which is what a tabletop exercise would be.
Sure. On its face, compared, like without having anything to compare it to.
Right.
Would a structured walkthrough tabletop be, quote, expensive?
That's a good question. First off, who's going to be in there? You have to get a bunch of people in the room.
Yeah, that's right? Expensive. You got a lot of salaries in there.
You're going to have a lot of dollars and salary in there. Maybe if you have the CEO in there, it can get expensive.
Okay.
But, you know, by the same token, this is part of their jobs, right? So it's already factored into the cost. So you're not incurring any additional cost by doing this. Okay. So, I mean, I don't know. I would say that there is a labor cost,
sure,
but it's not stopping anybody from doing anything else.
Sure. It's not like it could be any different than a different type of meeting.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be just like an all-day meeting.
Yeah. So the next one says DRP review.
Right.
What is that?
That's essentially like a document review.
Okay.
I used to do these all the time when I was writing technical manuals for government agencies, you know. And you had to write them very meticulously,
mm-hmm.
right? And a disaster recovery plan is going to be no different. You're going to have to write something so that somebody who picks it up who hasn't seen it before, or hasn't seen it in 6 months, mm-hmm. can read it and go, okay, it's clear what I need to do here.
Got it.
So I think this is probably the least expensive.
Okay, so this is probably an answer choice that we can safely throw out.
Dismiss.
We get rid of it. So now there's two left. There's parallel processing mm-hmm. and complete business interruption.
Correct. So complete business interruption, I kind of disregarded this, which is the correct answer, as an invalid choice because you're not going to do a complete... Why would you disrupt your business to do a disaster recovery plan assessment? I mean, I guess you could.
This is what I'm talking about. I love it. This is so meta. We were talking about the real world versus the exam world, right? They are saying in this hypothetical world, yeah, you might not want to do it, but it would be the most expensive. And in fact, that might be another reason not to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be too expensive.
That's an excellent point because you're going to lose. First off, are you in a kind of business where you can say, all right, everybody, we're going to be down for 3 days while we do do a disaster recovery plan exercise?
Yeah.
I mean, Amazon will never say that sentence.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. So, Joe, as we wrap up this sort of mini session going through your diagnostic exam, what is one thing that you learned, even just going through the question itself? Is there anything that you did hear or learned from this question that you got wrong that is going to change or impact how you approach the next question?
I don't know right now. I'll tell you what it does impact. Mm-hmm. It does impact the way I'm going to think about the material as I'm going through it and the level of specificity that they're looking for. And if they're looking for these linguistic specificities, like, okay, what is the most expensive way? Well, yeah, shutting your business down is pretty expensive. Nobody likes to do that. Okay.
So basically, if I could say it back to you, you're basically going to be really careful with making sure that you're kind of thinking like the test maker.
Correct.
You got to get in their brain space, in their mindset, think about it from their perspective, not necessarily your perspective as the practitioner or test taker.
Yes, that's correct. I'm going to be thinking like them.
Excellent. So,
or trying to think like them.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe
that's
I will not be thinking like them.
You don't want to think like that. That's a scary place to be.
Right.
Just kidding, IC Squared. We know we love you. We're official training partners of IC Squared. So, we're friends with them.
Much.
That's right. And you too, Isaka and Comtia in EC Council. Anyway. So, Joe, keep up the good work. Keep up the studying. Next time we meet, we'll talk a little bit more about how your studies have been going now that you have the data to actually start with the study. So, good luck.
Thank you.
That's my Hacking Humans colleague, Joe Kerrigan, along with N2K CyberWire's Sam Meisenberg. Ann Johnson is the host of Microsoft's Afternoon Cyber Tea podcast, right here on the N2K CyberWire network. In her latest episode, she's joined by Graham Cluley and Carol Terrio, hosts of the Smashing Security podcast.
Today, I am joined by Graham Cluley and Carol Terrio, fellow podcast hosts of the show Smashing Security. Smashing Security is this incredibly helpful and really hilarious take on tech snafus. Each week, Carol and Graham talk about, I know. That's a great way to put it, isn't it? All right. We're going to have some fun today, by the way, on Afternoon Cyber Tea. And we're going to have Carol and Graham. They chat normally about cybercrime and hacking and online privacy and all kinds of things. But I want to first welcome you to Afternoon Cyber Tea, Graham and Carol.
Thank you very much. What a delight to be here.
Thank you so much for having us. It's such a pleasure.
Look, it's a household name in the cyber world. Can you talk a little about how it came to be? What inspired both of you to create it in December of 2016? And Graham, let's start with you this time.
Well, I think Carol will agree with me that Smashing Security was entirely my idea. It was my concept. It was my instigation. No, the truth is that for some years, Carol has always loved podcasts from the early days of podcasts. And she kept saying to me, "When don't we do a podcast? When don't we do a podcast?" And for years and years, she nagged me that we should do one. And eventually, one drunken evening, probably, I don't know, but for some reason, she had some blackmail on me. And so we began to produce a podcast. And it turned out to be quite popular. And we've been doing it pretty much every single week since. I think we're just up to about 360 episodes, something like that. So we've done a lot of them. Still funny things to say, though.
That's fantastic. And Carol, how do you think about it? Why did you start it? Are you loving it, et cetera?
I don't know. It's become something that I do every week, you know? And what's interesting, I think, for us is that we are a team of two. And we invite guests, but we have like all this great stuff that other podcasts have, like editors and script writers and all this stuff. It's just the two of us. So, you know, and you know it's a lot of work to run a podcast, especially if you've got supporters as well and you want to be part of a community. And I think what's great about working with Graham is because we've worked together before, we know each other's strengths and shortcomings. And we somehow have been able to fill those gaps in order to have a successful show for all these years. And long may it continue, shall I say.
Well, let's get into the heart of this. On your show, you cover a wide range of topics from cyber to hacking to privacy. What is one topic that surprised you or challenged your perspectives during the journey, and one that surprises you because it continues to come up a lot? Carole, you first.
We've covered so many topics, you know, because like Graham said, we've had 360 episodes. So honestly, I kind of forget what story I've covered as soon as it's published and out in the world. It's really, it's like a mental toilet that I flush as soon as we publish, and then I can focus on the other bazillion things in my life. But saying that, there is one that is currently seared in my memory. I was recently duped by an Instagram scam in December. Hook, line, and sinker. And I know very well what to look out for, right? But somehow the scam managed to skew my vision in such a way that I couldn't hear that inner voice saying, "What the heck are you doing?" until I had paid for the non-existent product, right? And this for me was a super humbling and, okay, honestly, humiliating experience because I should know better, right? If anyone's supposed to know better, I should know better. But it also made me viscerally aware that there's lots of shame when people get duped in these kind of scams, like be it malvertisement or romance scams or whatever. And I think I'm learning that the way to get over shame is to talk about it. So I decided on my own, you know, to own it and to tell the story on Smashing Security. And I didn't tell Graham, right? I didn't tell you beforehand. So you walked in totally blind so we could get your honest reaction, your supportive reaction.
Be sure to check out the Afternoon Cyber Tea podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And finally, in an almost comedic twist that reads like the plot of a satirical novel, the UK's very own Guardians Against Eavesdropping, the National Authority for Counter-Eavesdropping, have been caught with their hands in the proverbial cookie jar. Granted new powers in October 2021 to sift through communications data for national security, they somehow managed to trip over the fine line between surveillance and unlawful snooping, all in a botched attempt to uncover a journalistic source. According to the 2022 annual report from the Investigatory Powers Commissioner's Office, which oversees these activities, the UK's watchdogs were anything but vigilant, racking up a high incidence of errors and proceeding without necessary judicial green lights. Sir Brian Leveson, the commissioner himself, was apparently so alarmed by these findings that he questioned the organization's competency to lawfully wield its powers without someone looking over its shoulder. The outcome was a temporary revocation of their self-authorization privileges until they could prove themselves capable of not tripping over their own feet. Fast forward to a December 2022 reinspection, and UK NACE appears to have cleaned up its act, convincing the powers that be of its renewed competency. By January 2023, it was back to business as usual, with the government voicing its confidence in an agency that had just moments before proven it needed a little more than just a slap on the wrist. Our Who Watches the Watchman desk commented that watching an entity designed to prevent unlawful eavesdropping get chastised for unlawful eavesdropping is an irony so rich it could only be served with a side of humble pie. One can only hope this serves as a reminder of the importance of oversight, especially when it comes to protecting the sanctity of journalistic sources. You'll forgive me if I'm not holding my breath. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.